This is a short recording by Chesney William England of Ludham, with some memories of bygone days. I was born at Ludham the 21st of June 1919 in one of the terraced cottages in the High Street. I have heard it was on this day, just 7 months after the end of the Second World War, that the Germans scuttled their navy at Scapa Flow. My mother used to tell me, too, I was born in a thunderstorm at about 1:30 p.m. on that day. My father was killed in a mill accident at Wexham in November 1920, when I was 17 months old. He was renewing the leather seals on the sluice doors when the dam holding back the river water collapsed and he was crushed between the sluice doors. I know my mother had a struggle to bring up my sister and myself. There was no compensation in those days. Just 3 shillings a week allowed for each of us, and her 10 shillings a week widow's pension. I am now the last of the England family living at Ludham, with my wife Beryl and one daughter Gillian, who lives in Norwich. One of the first things I can remember is the carrier's carts, which were our means of transport before the buses came to Ludham. These were owned by Arthur Beaver, who lived in a house towards Fritton. I think this was about 1924, and one would have to book up for a journey to Yarmouth or Norwich, and you had a choice of 3 days a week, either Mondays, Wednesdays or Saturdays. We would always go round to our neighbours in those days and ask if they wanted anything from town. On one occasion I remember Mother took us to Yarmouth on Carnival Day, and in the crowd I can remember I had to hang on to my mother's skirt for dear life, but my sister became separated from us, and we eventually found her in the last children's enclosure on the beach. This was the first and the only time my mother took us to Yarmouth on Carnival Day. After the buses came in 1926, the old carrier's carts rotted in the corner of a field at the end of Latchmore Lane. I can picture them now, and they provided a play area for us kids for a long time afterwards. I can just remember the old playing field on the back road going towards Fritton. This was near the huts, prefabricated bungalows which were erected after the First World War for those with small holdings. Two of the families living there I knew, the Adams and the Haygreens, who went to Ludham School. The playing field was in use until the village hall was opened in 1926. This was a big event in the village, and those of my age can remember it quite well. I can remember the bran tub at the corner of the hall and the sports on the playing field in the afternoon, and then at the end of the day there was 3 cheers for Mr. William Wright of Ludham Hall, who did such a lot to make this all possible. Us boys used to enjoy birds nesting in the spring, and I used to go with Alec Gibbs and Turkey Beaver, to name just two. And after school, we would make our way down to St. Bennet's Abbey looking for sparrowhawk's eggs. We never found any, as the birds nested high up in the mill tower and it was impossible for us to get at them. The sand hole at Cold Harbour was another favourite spot for birds nesting. We used to take our shoes and socks off and paddle about in the water-filled pit looking for water hen's eggs. One day I slipped and I fell in up to my neck and almost drowned. Edith Parfitt, later Arnip, heard my screams and took me home. And Kenny Grapes, who lived 2 doors from us, said, "That will take some explaining, boy. Why didn't you get your feet wet?" I can recall listening to the boom of the bitterns from the Howhill marshes on a still evening, and the sound would carry right up into the village. And at this time, Chris Boardman was taking his now famous photographs of bitterns nesting in the reed marshes. Now, just talking about birds, I must mention this. Shortly after the last war, Russell Fulcher and myself and some members of the British Legion were invited to an evening at Edward Seagull's to meet Field Marshal Claude Auchinleck. And on our return home at about midnight, we heard a bird singing in a thicket near the church. We stopped to listen, and Russell said to me, "That's a nightingale." And this is the only time in my life I have heard this bird at Ludham. And I think this is an experience which will perhaps never happen again. We always look forward to the annual fair on Latchmore Field with the swinging boats and the steam horses. I loved the steam horses, but not so much the swinging boats, as they used to upset my stomach. We had free rides before the fair opened, which was paid for by Mr. Charlie Green instead of him taking rent for the field. And there were also stalls on Stocks Hill and outside the King's Arms, selling rock and fair buttons. A travelling circus visited the village during the summer on the same field as the fair. And one year I remember an elephant coming with the other performing animals. And when his turn came, he refused to do his tricks. Everyone thought the tent was coming down when he let out such a terrific roar. Fortunately, everything passed off all right when the circus master insisted he finish his act. But I know one or two of us made a quick dash for the exit. We used to play various games in the high street, spinning tops and bowling a hoop along with a stick. All these games were played in season, and there would be a sudden craze for one game, and then after a few weeks another one would take its place. We shared our outside toilet with our next door neighbour, and this I remember had twin seats. I can remember it being embarrassing at times in the mornings when in a hurry, only to arrive and find the door locked. We complained about this to our landlord, Mr. Tom Slipper, who was a farmer and one of the church wardens, and he had Lenny Bush the carpenter build us one all to ourselves. The freshwater pump was also shared by our neighbours, and the pump would have to be well covered up during the winter months with sacking and straw. The temptation then was to put hot water down the pump to thaw it out, but this would inevitably perish the leather on the pump plunger, and the pump would pack up. When this happened, water would be fetched from the bulk about 300 yards down School Road. This was a shallow well alongside the road, built over a spring. And although the water was crystal clear, we had to boil it because the odd frog would sometimes get in the well. Several of the villagers I knew by nicknames, like Mun Cook, Fum Slaughter, Clash Pollard, Loney England, who's my grandfather, and Fatal Grapes, and there were many more. And Mr. Wright of Ludham Hall, we always knew him as Hunchy. That's an old custom which is now dying out. We look forward to the socials in the church room on Saturday nights and the concert parties with Sidney Grapes and Donald Wright, and I can still remember his signature tune. There is a young man named Wright who's trying to amuse you tonight. He hopes he succeeded with just what you've needed, and he hopes you've enjoyed it all right. From an early age, my mother would show us how to make mats, and this helped to occupy our time down the winter evenings. Old items of clothing we'd save and cut up into strips to make the thrums, and then thread them through Hessian sacking. Tatting was another pastime with a cotton reel and old wool. My mother usually had a cure for our minor ailments, like rolling up pieces of butter in sugar to ease a sore throat. And my grandmother had a magic cure for any cuts or bruises, which she called her Ubadildock. This was a mixture of Fry's balsam and iodine and some other ingredient. I just can't remember now. We kept away from the doctor as much as possible. There was no waiting room, and we had to wait outside in all weathers for our turn to go in. Dear old Dr. Brown, his advice was always the same to us: take this, go to bed and keep warm. I can remember two of the menfolk covering the high street with litter and straw to deaden the noise of the horse and carts if anyone was seriously ill at home. When I was 8 years old, we moved to Flegborough to look after my ageing grandparents. We lived in an old thatched cottage there dated 1735, and I can remember the ticking raft spiders keeping us awake at nights. The recent earth tremor at Swaffham brings to mind the earth tremor of June 1931. This was early one Sunday morning, about 1:30. I was awake at the time when I felt a terrific shaking and a noise which sounded like branches breaking off trees and gravel being tipped off a lorry. I slept then in a bed next to my grandfather, and he jumped up in the bed and said, "Stop shaking my bed, boy." I can remember the R101 airship passing over the village and then on to Norwich. This was about a week before its ill-fated journey to India. After the death of my grandparents in 1933, we returned to Ludham, and I spent my last term at Ludham School. I left school later that year, and my first job was at Ludham Manor, which lasted just over a year. During my time there, I planted the fir trees alongside the footpath in Yarmouth Road. But I had a keen urge to learn a trade, and one evening I called to see Mr. Herbert Woods of Potter Ham, with a view to becoming an apprentice boat builder. After about 2 or 3 days, I had a reply which said, "We can take you on at 6 shillings a week." And when I told my mother this, she said, "Well, I'm taking 4 shillings for a start." And this left me with 2 shillings for myself. I was having music lessons with Dolly Grimes at the time, the church organist, and her fee was 1 shilling a lesson, which left me with 1 shilling, and sixpence I spent for fish and chips from Harry Grapes's on Saturday nights, and the other sixpence to pay for my cups of tea at work. Then in 1963, I became interested in my family history, and I decided to carry out a thorough search of the parish registers. This eventually took me about 7 years to complete. The first England I found recorded at Ludham was David England, born 1715, who was the son of David and Anne. David England, born 1715, had a brother Robert, born 1716, and they both reached adult life. I found evidence in the church warden's register that Robert supplied building material for Ludham Church from time to time, and I think it is safe to assume they were millwrights from the turn of the 17th century. I can still picture the old workshops in the High Street in the 1920s. The entrance The entrance was opposite the police house, and just back from the road there was a tall building which stored the pony carts and the harness gear. The top story was accessible from a wooden stairway on the outside. This story contained some carpenter's benches and a hand-operated lathe for wood turning. And at the end of the building was Dan's office. At the foot of the stairway, there were some old traction engine boilers which Dan had used in his experiments to convert his turbine apparatus to steam power. The blacksmith shop was further at the back, and there was a diesel engine which provided power for the other large workshops. When this diesel engine started up, the whole building would shake until the gear had gathered speed. I remember seeing the saw pits in use when the whole tree trunk would be cut up into planks, all done by hand. Dan England was the first man in Ludham to generate and use electricity in his millwright workshops. Dan England, 1823 to 97, was the inventor of the turbine drum, which would lift half as much water again as the scoop wheel. And it is said if this had been patented at the time, it would have brought him a fortune. Ludham had three corn mills. The great gale of the 24th of March 1896 did much damage to the mills, and the post mill in Lover's Lane was completely destroyed. Albert Warner, who was a lad of eight at the time, told me the high street at the time was covered with tiles and thatch from the houses. And Arthur Newton, the son of Ebenezer Newton of the Crown House, told me the same story. It was a gale which was long remembered by Ludham people. I can just remember the hoy mill working about 1926. There were a few vanes left in the sails, and as these fell out, the mill finally ceased working. It was recorded by the late Mr. H. O. Clarke, the Norwich historian, that this mill had an interesting feature. It said, whereas the sails of a mill rotate opposite to the hands of a clock as you face them, this mill rotated clockwise and was one of the very few in the country built this way. I can't remember anything about the corn mill at Howe Hill. I know it was built in 1823 and was working until 1890, and Mr. Boardman had water tanks installed in the tower for use on the fruit farm. Ludham had seven wind pumps, two on the Horse Fen marshes and one at Cold Harbour. Then there were two at Ludham Bridge and two at Howe Hill. I can remember four in working order: Goodwin's Mill on the Horse Fen marshes near the boundary with Potter Ham, and then one at Ludham Bridge and two at Howe Hill. The recently restored trestle wind pump at Howe Hill was originally Dan England's own design. The earliest wind pumps were of wood construction and had cloth sails. These required constant attention, and in a strong wind they were very difficult to control. And if the brake wheel failed to hold, sparks would fly and the mill would easily catch fire. To overcome this, brick towers were built, but still using the cloth sails. The remains of one of these mills is on the Horse Fen marshes opposite the sailing school. In 1807, a Norfolk man, William Cubitt, he later became Sir William, invented the shuttered sail, and this enabled taller and more powerful mills to be built. England's were closely connected with William Cubitt, who had a business then at Horning Lower Street. And together they experimented with this new idea, and the first patent sales were fitted to a post mill at Horning by William England, 1770 to 1830. The last wind pump was built by Dan England at St Olave's in 1910 for Lord Somerleyton. Dan England's working drawings of Norfolk windmills are still in existence.